It's time for CBB 365 with your hosts, Adam Hipsky and Patrick Dallahan.
All right. We are back. Our first episode of the regular season, our first recap. Sorry we couldn't bring any other episodes to you guys for this season. We've just been super swamped, whether it be with school, broadcasting, other outside stuff. It's just been pretty crazy. But now we're finally able to get a good recording schedule going. We're going to get a lot of good content out for you guys. But yeah, our first recap of the season starts now. And what a better way to bring it all to a beginning than talk about Gonzaga. I mean, they've had a ridiculous start to their season, a ridiculous first 3 weeks. They've played three top five teams in the country, two of which were in neutral site games. Their first ranked matchup came against number five Texas at Gonzaga, which was just a crazy game. I mean, that really showed to us how good Gonzaga was. Right, Adam, like, do you have any thoughts about that game?
Yeah, I mean, these last couple of weeks, Gonzaga, obviously you kind of need it to make up for what they go through from, you know, December through March, because you don't really see them play a quality opponent after. I mean, they'll have two games against BYU, but outside of that, you really see their last out-of-conference test against Texas Tech on the 18th of December. So credit to Gonzaga, put together a pretty tough non-conference schedule, and it's really only about halfway done. Looked pretty dominant in two of them, and then one they showed that they do have flaws, and they're not unbeatable, which was against Duke. But I mean, they just beat the brakes off of UCLA in a game that was hyped up to be number one versus number two. UCLA returned everyone from last year's Final Four run. And Gonzaga just outplayed them in every aspect. And I think that UCLA, it makes me a little concerned about them due to the fact that I think this is where UCLA is going to have their like best advantage, since they do return everyone. And by the end of the year, once you get into March, that a lot of teams are going to be able to start playing a little bit better together, which, you know, you kind of saw that when UCLA played Villanova. I thought that maybe that kind of the togetherness that they had from a year ago would carry over. Not saying that UCLA can't improve, but I think that their ceiling's a little bit lower than some other teams that have a lot of new pieces. So I would say that's my takeaway from UCLA. Duke looks a lot better than they were a year ago. I mean, you know, they've got the new pieces, and I mean, they look like absolute superstars. And Duke's dangerous. I mean, it's not a typical Duke team than the one we saw a year ago. And Coach K's last ride, playing with maybe a little bit extra on their shoulders. But I would say that those are probably my three takeaways. One, Gonzaga, I think, has a little bit much. I would say my three main takeaways: Gonzaga is a little bit more of a higher ceiling with the new pieces that they brought in, and until someone can really guard Drew Timmy, I still think Gonzaga is probably a number one seed.
Right, but we know the formula to contain Drew Timmy is to get a really athletic big man on him. I mean, we saw that last year with Baylor. They had a plethora of athletic big men. I mean, Mark Vitale did an excellent job guarding him in the paint. Flo Thamba, another good one. Just a bunch of really athletic big guys. And, you know, we saw that with Duke. Duke put Mark Williams on Drew Timmy, and he dominated in the paint all game. And Paolo Banchero as well, like, was even able to switch on to Drew Timmy for a little bit. But we saw how unbelievable Duke was. Like, I hate Duke as much as the next guy, right? I can't stand their fans. I'm not a big Coach K guy, but this Duke team is special. And the driving force behind it is obviously Paolo Banchero. But I do think that people need to give more credit to Mark Williams and Wendell Moore Jr., as well as Jeremy Roach, too, and Trevor Keels, who's 6 months older than I am and averages, like, what, 15 points a game as a true freshman. Like, he's built like a linebacker, and he's running the point. He does an excellent job. He gets his own shot incredibly well. He's a great passer. But moving back to that other diaper dandy, Paolo Banchero, I mean, what doesn't that kid do? Right? Like, he passes. He said his passing is the best part of his game and what separates him from the pack and what separates him from Chet Holmgren, for example. And I'd agree with that 100%, as well as his ability to pull up from the three and really be a threat from anywhere once he crosses half court. I think that he's probably the best player in the country right now. I'd take him over Drew Timmy. If gun to my head, one or the other, I'd take Paolo Banchero. And I say that pretty confidently. I mean, he had 20 points in the first half before he was sidelined with cramps. And that happened against Kentucky as well, and when he played an unbelievable game against the very good Kentucky team being guarded by Oscar Tshiebwe. But I think that Duke is the real deal, and I think that they're the heavy favorites to win the ACC this season, Klein.
Yeah, I think Gonzaga is still pretty good. I think they're still very good. I think they needed or felt they needed to schedule a tough non-conference schedule. They obviously did that. We've seen them play three top five teams already in the first 3 weeks of the season, but the WCC has had a fantastic start to the season, and I'm not sure this is going to end up being the cakewalk through the WCC that we have seen from Gonzaga for the last several years. I mean, if you take San Francisco, you take BYU, and you take St. Mary's, those three teams are a combined 20-1 to start the season. USF has beat Nevada and UAB, but BYU is a top 25 team right now with wins over San Diego State, Oregon, Utah, and St. Mary's just went to the championship game at the Maui Invitational and took Wisconsin down to the wire. The WCC is good.
Yeah, the WCC has the potential to be maybe a four-bid league, which if you said that in any other year, which would be like that would be like you're ridiculous, like you're tripping. You know, like that's just not a thing. And this year in the WCC, it is. I mean, St. Mary's is always pretty good. They made the tournament in 2019. BYU is a consistent tournament team. Alex Barcelo is nothing short of incredible. And San Francisco, I mean, we saw them beat Virginia last year. So all three of those teams are no slouches when it comes to being able to play with bigger teams. And BYU's win over Oregon does unfortunately become less and less impressive each game Oregon plays, because Oregon stinks. They've gotten the brakes beaten off of them by multiple teams now. But even then, to go into Eugene and in a true road game and go and beat the hell out of them is still impressive nonetheless. So the far more athletic team and stronger team, and you could say what better coach team with Dane Altman, you know? But moving on, let's get into Oregon a little bit. Let's get into the Maui Invitational. The biggest takeaway I'd have from that is that Houston is really inconsistent, like dangerously inconsistent.
Yeah. Well, even going back to their opener, had to go to overtime to beat Hofstra. And then they get into Maui, and then, you know, had an up and down weekend there.
Right. Like Marcus Sasser, like the only consistent player on that team is Marcus Sasser, right? Excellent player, averages like 20 points a game. You know, he's your guy. He's your best shooter. And they're a very good rebounding team, very good defensive team. That's always going to be a strength of a Kelvin Sampson-led team. That being said, I didn't see any of that, I guess, against Wisconsin. Just none of that, which is honestly, if I'm them, that's unacceptable, right? If I'm Houston, that's unacceptable. And they looked terrible. I mean, obviously, in the second half, they stormed back, and they had it. They had a chance to tie the game or maybe even win it, if my memory serves me correctly. Marcus Sasser obviously couldn't come through. But, you know, with Houston, not with Memphis in the AAC, Houston can't afford to play like this. with a team that's so supremely talented like Houston, like Memphis, my apologies, with Jalen Duren and Amani Bates. You know, those are two top 25 players in the country. You can't afford to mess around with them. And Memphis really needs to buckle up, because if they don't, it's going to bite them in the ass. It really will. And this is not something that they expected to happen to them this season.
Yeah, Memphis hasn't looked as strong as what I think anyone really expected. I mean, they came into the season as one of the highest national championship favorites outside of kind of the main contenders from last year. They're kind of the only team that wasn't in the mix last year, that was kind of had a good odds to win the national championship. And then so far, they just have not looked dominant at all. I mean, losing to 20 by by no means a good Iowa State team. I mean, Iowa State's going to be middle of the pack of the Big 12. And they've had a good start to the season.
Yeah, I was going to say, you think so? They just beat the hell out of Memphis, and they beat a pretty good Xavier team as well.
Yeah, I like their coach in his first year. I like Iowa State. I don't know. I think the Big 12 is going to be a lot better than what it was or what it has been in previous years. I mean, you've got Baylor.
It's going to be hard to top what it was last year.
Yeah,
last year it was the best conference in the country, hands down, I think.
I think Oklahoma gets better. Oklahoma State probably gets a little bit worse, but Texas Tech, Kansas, Baylor, I think will all still be really solid. So I'd probably slot Iowa State maybe a little bit behind them right now. But they're still going to have their chances. I mean, they've still got Creighton and Iowa before they get into conference play. So, and all that'll figure itself out. But Memphis, I still go back to, I don't think Memphis is as good as what anyone's saying or what anyone was saying before the season.
I think it's hard to take a conglomeration of recruits and turn it into a team the way Memphis has attempted to do. These are not guys who have played with each other very much at all. These are not guys who knew each other at all. And they just put them out there. And it's one of the most talented teams, no doubt about it, with Jalen Duren and obviously Bates. But I just don't think they have the chemistry yet, and I'm not saying they won't get there and won't be able to make a run in March after they play the whole American season. But right now, they're just not enough of a team to beat a well-coached, well-organized, well-put-together Iowa State or some of the other teams they've faced so far.
Right, and you mentioned coaching. This is a big year. This is a boom or bust year for Penny Hardaway. Like, he's had excellent rosters for every season at Memphis, and he hasn't done anything with them, like literally nothing. So this is a big year for him to prove if he's capable of coaching a team, not just throwing together a couple sets and be like, yeah, just go out there, make a couple passes, shoot a three, dump it down low to a big guy or something. You know, he needs to actually show that he's capable of coaching. You know, people are already saying, like, we know the recruiting's there. We know he can get guys to play for him. But now he needs to get guys to win for him. He needs to get guys to play under him. You know, like, and he hasn't done that yet. And this year is a big, big year for him to prove if he's actually a coach, and not just someone that's there to monitor the situation.
Okay. Next, MTE do we
not an MTE. Michigan sucks. I want to get that out of the way. I don't think that they're very good at all. I know that's going to hurt your feelings, Adam. They suck. I'm sorry. They're just not experienced. They're not that talented compared to everybody else in the Big Ten. Purdue is going to wipe the floor with them. After watching Michigan lose to Arizona, who's pretty good, and Seton Hall, who's also pretty good, but not nearly as talented or deep as Michigan, I just don't think that Michigan has it. I don't think this is the same Michigan team as last year. I don't even have them in my top 25 right now. I don't even have them as a ranked team. I just don't see it with them.
And I agree with you somewhat. I don't think Michigan has it right now. I don't think they have it now. I'm not saying that they're going to be to the level that they were last year. I mean, you lose pretty much four startable pieces from last year's team: Mike Smith, Shondi Brown, Isaiah Livers, and Franz Wagner. So you lose those four guys. So I think you really have to trust Juwan to get these guys. I mean, you've got at least four new guys in the rotation. So how do you kind of fit those guys in? It's gonna take time. But I think that he's got enough time and enough of a schedule where they're going to hit some bumps in the road. But I think all in all, they have the talent to hang at the top of the Big Ten. Just right now, I don't think that they really have an identity or know what they are yet. But they've got a big one this week against North Carolina. I think that'll tell a lot.
Yeah, I think that's a pretty good measuring stick game for them. But if I'm Michigan, I am scared out of my mind of Purdue. They're everything that Michigan like wants to emulate and wants to be. This Purdue team this year, at least. I think that you could talk me into thinking that Purdue is the best team in the country. Like, there's nothing they can't do. I wasn't as high as them coming into the season as everybody else, even as you, Adam. But Purdue is legit. Like they do everything and they do everything well.
Going into the Duke Gonzaga game, I think the consensus was that if Duke beat Gonzaga, Purdue would leapfrog the Bulldogs for the top spot in the country. And I think Duke played themselves into that top spot. And we're probably looking at Duke 1, Purdue 2, Gonzaga 3 in the next AP poll.
And I think Purdue, the start that they've gotten off to is everything that UCLA wanted to be. I mean, returning everyone. And it Purdue's still, they beat North Carolina, but they also beat Villanova,
Yeah, I was gonna say
which UCLA also did.
yeah, but the score of the Villanova game
Yeah, also
does
true.
not reflect that game. Purdue outplayed them the entire game, like all 40 minutes, I think at least, with the exception of the first half. I think that like sometimes in the first half, I think that Purdue was far and away the better team. They were bigger, they were faster, they were smarter, they shot the ball way better. Like they did everything well. I haven't seen anything about them that I don't like.
But when we talk about ceilings and floors, you got to think that Purdue's ceiling is not as high as some of these other teams. I mean, you got to think that how close. I mean, all these guys have played together already. I mean, Caleb First is really the only one new into the rotation.
But Caleb First and Jaden Ivey played together in the FIBA U19 tournament this year. So it's like they've
So
played together as well.
they've all had chemistry, but I'm talking about some of these teams that have so many new pieces that are maybe talented but haven't played together, like Memphis or like a Texas. I mean, you got to think that those two teams
Right.
still have a lot more room of improvement, which is why I think Purdue and UCLA looked like they were having success before the Gonzaga game. But I think that's why these more experienced teams are having more success early on.
Agree. And I think, but I think Purdue's experience and chemistry carries them throughout the year. I think that Purdue is like, this is pretty consensus and lukewarm take, not even lukewarm. They're a Final Four caliber team, and I think they will make the Final Four. I'll have them penciled into my bracket once we get to that weekend in March. I think that they're the best team in the Big Ten by a long shot, and I think that they're probably the most complete team in the country right now. I mean, any team that has Travion Williams coming off the bench is probably going to be a top tier team in college basketball.
Yeah, I agree. I agree. Yeah, no, you're not wrong. I mean, Purdue's got a lot of weapons, and a lot of guys can have off nights, and a lot of guys can step up. I mean, that's pretty deathly when you come to get into March with the amount of weapons that they have.
But yeah, let's move on to some more MTEs. The Battle for Atlantis brought to you by Bad Boy Mowers, one of the more confusing sponsored tournament combinations I've seen. But anyways, Baylor beats the brakes off Michigan State in the championship. But someone that really – the team that really caught a lot of people's eyes in that tournament was UConn. And I'd like to talk about them. I think that they have a long ways to go to be there with guys like, you know, to take that jump in the ranking. They're obviously like a 20 to 25 team in most people's top 25s. So that's where I have them. Their defense is one of the best in the country, if not the best in the country, alongside VCU. But, man, they are just anemic on offense. Like, if Adama Sanogo isn't on, that offense is painful to watch. Like, that game against VCU, like, I was basically strapped to the couch because I didn't want to miss it for so we could talk about it. But, that team is so hard to watch. And they don't have anyone that's like a good spot-up shooter except for Jordan Hawkins and RJ Cole. Jordan Hawkins is a freshman, which is – so it's completely unfair, in my opinion, to place a big responsibility on him in a team that has nobody that can score the ball at will whatsoever, like James Bouknight. Like, no one is remotely close to his ability to run an offense last year. And – UConn is going to run into some deep trouble if they don't figure out a way to get this offense going, because these slow starts in games, they can only get past them so much.
I agree. I mean, the Big East, we talked to John Fanta about it. He thought UConn was in the mix, and I think they still are. They've got a lot of room to improve, but I mean, the Auburn game, could have lost it, could have won it. They end up winning it, but it could have gone either way. And then, I mean, they were competitive against Michigan State, obviously, and Michigan State. I think that even though they lost to Baylor, I think that Michigan State's still a pretty solid team at the end of the day. So I don't know if I've seen enough of UConn to really determine where I think that they can end up, but I don't think it's as – I mean, they need to improve. They need to improve if they want a chance to win the Big East.
Hand up. I was really wrong about Michigan State. I was really, really wrong about Michigan State. I can't stress enough how wrong I was. They're really good. I think we talked about this in our group chat, or at least maybe in Klein and I did. I don't remember. But we were saying that Michigan State doesn't have a guy. And then literally the next day, Gabe Brown stepped up to be the guy. I think that they're trying to mold Max Christie's into that guy. He's a season away from being what Gabe Brown is now. But I think that Michigan State is in a really good spot going forward for this season. And we know Tom Izzo's ability to coach teams. He's been to 8 Final Fours, you know, January, February, Izzo, April. He is an unbelievable coach, and he'll make his way. This Spartans team will make their way to the tournament. And now they've definitely proven me wrong without a shadow of a doubt. Klein?
I don't know if Michigan State is going to rumble through the Big Ten. They're going to have Purdue. They're going to have Michigan. They're going to have some trouble. The Big Ten is not as deep as last year, but still pretty deep. But Michigan State is not a team I want between me and the Final Four in the March Madness bracket at all. Like UConn? UConn's tough. I mean, they had an interesting week. They've got, I'm going to say, top 10 talent on their roster in the country, but they just haven't quite looked in sync yet, especially, as you said, on the offensive end. I think if they can get that together, if they can start to move the ball, if they can start to get some shot making, maybe from RJ Cole, maybe from anyone other than Tyler Pauly and Adama Sanogo, I think they'll be really, really good and could end up in the top 15 by the end of the year.
Yeah. And with Michigan State, the thing that impressed me the most, like, again, Klein, you and I texted about this against Loyola Chicago. Their shot making is unbelievable, right? That's what killed them. That's what killed UConn ultimately in that game. They just make shots. Like, they don't take bad shots. And when they do, sometimes they don't miss them that often. So, like, there was a stretch, I think, in Loyola Chicago in that game when there was, like, I think, like, 10 straight possessions with scores with for both teams. Like, it was just crazy. So Michigan State's shot-making is there. We know that they have the ability on offense. And their defense is good, too. They have a top 10 defense in the country, according to KenPom. So it's very interesting.
Yeah, Loyola Chicago also, I think, is going to stick around even without Porter Moser. Drew Valentine is a really good coach. I think we've seen that early. Mm-hmm. They still have Lucas Williamson somehow, who is a good leader for that program. I'm excited to see them once they join the A-10 next year and get a little bit of a step up at competition. But I think they should end up running the table in that conference once again. And we'll see them in March one more time as a representative of the Missouri Valley Conference. Auburn is in that tournament as well. We saw them go to double overtime with UConn and beat their other two opponents, but the Tigers are not necessarily the same without Sharif Cooper, but I think they play just as fast as we've seen a lot of Bruce Pearl teams play. They play pretty good defense for an Auburn team. They have two really good bigs, including Walker Kessler. Auburn is another one of those teams that I think could make a surprise Final Four run. Syracuse is really bad.
Yeah, I was just about to say, Klein, Syracuse also sucks. Just not a good basketball team. I mean,
they just don't have any consistency whatsoever. You could get 30 or 5 from Joe Girard on any given night. Buddy Boeheim might have it, might not. Jimmy Boeheim might have it, might not. Jesse Edwards has had great games and really bad games. He played well against Arizona State, scored 21. Played well against Auburn, but in the first game of that tournament against BCU, the bigs completely laid an egg. They just have no consistency whatsoever. And when you don't know where your production is going to come from on a given night, it usually doesn't mean good things. There are situations, there are teams like Purdue where any given player could step up on any given night. Syracuse doesn't have the talent to have that kind of team. They need a go-to guy. Buddy Boeheim was their go-to guy in the tournament. Right now they don't have a go-to guy. That's what happens. That's what leads to losses like the loss to Colgate.
Loss to Colgate. Let's not discredit Colgate's ability to shoot from three and just kill teams with their offense. We saw them do it last year against Arkansas in the tournament. They're an excellent team. The net rankings always love them because of their ability to score a million points a game. But Syracuse is in some trouble. They really are. And the zone defense will always kill them against teams like Colgate to just shoot the three every time they have the ball. But it's like, I mean, they lost a lot of guys to transfers and some people decommitted. Obviously, they brought in Cole Swider, who's a fine bench player at best. But when you lose Quincy Gurrier and Kadari Richmond, I mean, that's just not going to go well.
Yeah, and in the loss to VCU in the first round of the Battle for Atlantis, the bench played 2 minutes in the second half.
Yeah, I mean, you just can't have
the
that.
Bench is Benny Williams and Simeer Torrence. There is just no depth. If you had a Quincy Guerrier, if you had a Kadari Richmond, and you added these other guys this offseason, all of a sudden, you've got a very deep team. Right now, you have a roster of 10 scholarship players, and no more than 7 of them are playing. There's just no depth, and there's nowhere to go when you need a bucket or when you need a stop. And they're just not going to be that good. I'm going to say right now, unless we see significant improvement, the peak of the Syracuse team is the bubble and maybe a berth into March.
Yeah. Like, mirror, but even then, that would take a lot of stuff to happen. Because this Syracuse team is just not what it was last year. And this Syracuse team last year wasn't amazing. They just benefited from an incredible run. in the tournament. But I mean, there isn't anything this Hughes team does well, you know?
Yeah, I mean, they brought in Cole Swider. He's supposed to be a shooter. He hasn't been a shooter. Buddy Boeheim has not replicated the production we saw from him last year. They needed Joe Girard to take a step up this year. He's been just as inconsistent, if not more inconsistent already, than he was last season. Jesse Edwards has been really the only big positive for them. They're still getting out-rebounded, which seems to happen to them often. They're just not in a good position right now. And there's a reason they went 1-2 in the battle for Atlantis.
All right, and we're just going to move back quickly to the Maui Classic. Wisconsin obviously came away champions. I hate the way Wisconsin plays, and I think that they're boring. But Johnny Davis is undeniably special. Excellent basketball player. Took over against Houston. Had a bunch of clutch buckets. An awesome dunk at the end of the game. He's very good. This Wisconsin team is probably the most Wisconsin-esque team I've ever seen. Just a group of guys where everybody's like 24. Nobody really that stands out like a ton besides Johnny Davis. And yeah, I mean, that's about it for me as far as my analysis on Wisconsin goes.
So now we'll just go through the Power Six, talk about kind of teams that have caught our eye. Teams that we haven't touched on already in this episode. So we'll start with the Big Ten. I'll say Indiana. Indiana's off to a 6-0 start. Only really tough opponent has been St. John's, but these guys are playing hard for Mike Woodson under their first year. So Trace Jackson's off to another good start, as kind of everyone expected. But
I didn't expect it, for the record. I did not expect him to be good.
Ooh.
Really, I said that in our Big Ten preview. I said that I didn't think he was going to be good.
I thought that, I mean, he's played really well so far this year. Just dropped 43 last night.
Oh, he's been lights out this year. I just didn't think he was going to be that good.
So I'll say IU 6-0. That's my surprise team, or a team that's caught my eye in the Big Ten and to keep your eye on going forward. Has Syracuse this Tuesday for the Big Ten ACC Challenge.
That's Klein thoughts.
Yeah, I'm going to say they're going to struggle to contain Trace Jackson Davis and the shooting that Indiana has on the outside, specifically Miller Kopp. This is a game with blowout potential on the road at Syracuse.
Patrick?
Yeah, I think that Indiana is definitely a team to keep your eye on. A team definitely to keep your eye on, but not for a good way in the Big Ten, is Rutgers. They are abysmal. Like, just so bad. They lost to Lehigh, Lafayette, UMass, and DePaul. Like, UMass was in the A-10 final last year. They're pretty good. Lehigh's all right.
They beat Lehigh in overtime. They beat Lehigh. Did they? In overtime. Yeah. Put some respect on their name.
Okay, fine. Whatever. I'm going to count that as a loss because they shouldn't be going overtime with Lehigh.
And real quick, a 48-35 win against Merrimack. 48-35.
Rutgers, Steve Fikow just doesn't have it this year. Nope. I mean, Rutgers just doesn't have it. I mean, how the hell do you lose to DePaul?
Or like, Lafayette or UMass, pretty much all of those.
Or allegedly Lehigh.
Yeah.
UMass isn't terrible. They beat Penn State again, another really bad team in the Big Ten. But I like Micah Shrewsbury, so he gets a pass.
There you go.
But like Big Ten, like Rutgers, they were a tournament team last year. They made it to the Sweet 16 and they almost beat Houston.
Yep.
Right? They were good last year. And like maybe losing Miles Johnson does it for them. Like they still have Ron Harper Jr. Like, he's their best player. And, I mean, it's just a mess. New Brunswick is in shambles.
Juan, Big Ten team?
How about Minnesota? They lose Marcus Carr, the clear best player they've had maybe since Kevin McHale. They have not played a ton of competition yet. They beat Western Kentucky, probably their toughest game. They go to Pitt for the Big Ten ACC Challenge and then go to Michigan State, make it Mississippi State, sorry, before Big Ten conference play begins. Two big tests for Minnesota. I think we will see if the Gophers are legit or not in their next two games.
Okay. We'll move into the SEC next. A team that I just talked about, an undefeated team in the last one. I'm going to stick with it here. LSU picked up a couple solid wins. Nothing really too outstanding. We kind of just touched on Penn State in the Big Ten. LSU beat them by 5 in overtime, but a pretty decent week for them. Beat Belmont, beat Penn State, beat Wake Forest. So they're off to a 7-0 start. It's a much different team, a team that kind of ran on Cam Thomas last year. Much different team this year, but they have Xavier Pinson and Darius Days back and off to a 7-0 start.
Yeah, and my team, the SEC, is the Mississippi State Bulldogs, as Klein mentioned. They have three excellent players that have stepped up for them this year. Garrison Brooks, Rocket Watts, and the best player on that team, in my opinion, Iverson Molinar. He can get it at all three levels. He's an excellent scorer, can pass a little bit, has an excellent handle, just does everything well when it comes to the offensive side of the ball. And I think that they're going to compete for the SEC title this year.
Fine.
Yeah, let's look at Kentucky. I mean, the close loss to Duke to kick off the season, and they haven't really played anyone since. They have a lot of talent. They have one of the most talented freshmen in the country in Ty Washington. I think they could be back after a pretty, pretty bad season last year, and we will find out soon because they go to Notre Dame, they go to Ohio State, and they host Louisville in the rivalry matchup. So three pretty good measuring stick games for Kentucky, and I think they'll be very good. They could go to the Final Four. I think they have enough talent to do that.
Mm-hmm. Okay, Big 12. Next, I'm going to go Oklahoma here. New coach, Porter Moser. He's going to get these guys playing right, and they don't look great right now. The results don't look great. But keep your eye on them in this upcoming week. I mean, they've got three tough matchups here before December 11th. They've got Florida, Butler, and Arkansas back to back to back. I think Tanner Groves, the two twins, Tanner and Jacob Groves, start to step up, but keep your eye on them. They've got a big week ahead of them. The results aren't there right now, but I think that they'll get there.
My team in the Big 12 is Baylor. They went pretty far under the radar for people coming into this year because they lost so many guys like Macy Oteague, Jared Butler, Davion Mitchell, Mark Vidal, who's now playing for the Seattle Seahawks. Why? I don't know. But I think that Baylor's excellent. I think that James Akinjo is that guy for them. He's going to be the go-to scorer. I think that Matt Meyer has done an excellent job stepping up. I think that Adam Flagler, also great. Why am I forgetting his name? James, you need to say it, Klein.
The transfer from Arizona?
No, not James Akinjo. I already mentioned him. John
Jonathan Chumbuchachua?
Yeah, Jonathan Chumbuchachua. Also been great so far. Baylor, obviously, probably the favorite in the Big 12 right now, in my opinion. I think that they'll beat Texas pretty handily. Another team – actually, no, I'm not going to say another team because it might be the team Klein says. I don't know.
We talked about them a little bit earlier, but Iowa State and T.J. Otzelberger has
that's not who I was going
to
say.
Really right. Hard. The other team I wanted to just bring up, Oklahoma State. We don't know if they're going to be eligible for the tournament, but they are playing really hard nonetheless. They have a couple of big non-conference victories already, and they have a really tough remainder of the non-conference slate. Xavier, Cleveland State, which was a tournament team last year, or could have been a tournament team last year. Houston and then USC before Big 12 play starts. Whether they can go to the tournament or not, Oklahoma State is very good. And even if they can't go to the postseason, I think they could spoil postseason hopes for a lot of other teams.
Yeah, the team I was going to mention too is Texas Tech. I mean, they're obviously undefeated, but they haven't beaten a team that's higher than, I think, 254 on KenPom. So it's like, yeah, take that with a grain of salt. They have a measuring stick game coming up against, was it Minnesota, you said? Minnesota. So I think that'll be a good test for them. But other than that, I think that they've been good. But something to keep an eye on is the Red Raiders and Kevin O'Banner and their first year without Chris Beard.
Okay, Pac-12.
Texas Tech does not play Minnesota. They play Providence, Tennessee, and Gonzaga.
Yikes. All right. So
three start to their schedule, real slow start to their schedule. North Florida, Grambling, Internet Word, Prairie View, Omaha, and Lamar, but it gets tough real quick.
Yeah, that gets tough fast. So you get one of the best centers in the Big 12, Nate Watson. You get Tennessee and Kennedy Chandler. And then you get Gonzaga. So it's like, I don't know. That's tough. They'll be lucky to go 2-1 in that stretch.
Okay. Pac-12, I'll open. I'm going to say Arizona. Arizona off to a 6-0 start, won the Classic in Las Vegas with Wichita State, beat them in overtime, and then seemed to really hit their stride against Michigan. This team is scary defensively. They have the height. They have the size. And to back that up, beyond just what you see on the court, they have the second average height in America. So obviously, you see that on the court. You see it reflect on their defensive side of the ball, and then you have the stat to back it up there. They've got some scores. I think they're really going to need to develop a go-to score. They've got a lot of pieces that can step up, but still don't see a go-to guy for them yet. But Tommy Lloyd in his first year at Arizona, I like the direction that Arizona's heading, especially in what seems to be a wide-open Pac-12 with UCLA. Looks like maybe they're not as strong as what people thought they were heading into the year.
Yeah, and the team I'm looking out for in the Pac-12 is USC. You called it, Adam, before this year. They've been excellent. Boogie Ellis has been awesome having full reins of this offense. I mean, they haven't missed a step without Evan Bagley. Not Evan Bagley, Evan Mobley, my bad. But yeah, they haven't lost a step at all. I think they've been great so far, and I think that they're going to run the table and win the Pac-12. Well, actually, no, I forgot about UCLA. Whoops.
Stanford is falling apart in front of our eyes. They had 4 years of Oscar Da Silva. They added Zaire Williams last year. He was clearly going to be a one-and-done player, but they completely wasted that opportunity. So far this season, they've lost to Santa Clara, got pumped by Baylor, and they actually played a conference game today against Colorado and lost that. Stanford not in a good place. Jaden Delayer, the Pac-12 most improved player from a year ago, is probably their best player now. They're in trouble, and I think their coach, Jared Haas, is probably.
What's that? Hey, ACC, there's a lot of options here. I'm going to go with North Carolina, Hubert Davis, first year. A tough start to their schedule. I mean, had two pretty tough games over the weekend. Purdue and Tennessee on back-to-back days. They dropped both of those and then struggled against Brown. But I really like this team. I think that they'll come together. I think they have a high ceiling. Brady Manick and Dawson Garcia were, I think, two big pickups. And then Caleb Love and RJ Davis make for a pretty good backcourt. And then Armando Bacot returns. So I think this North Carolina team has the pieces. But they just haven't necessarily put them together yet. They have Michigan coming up this week, and then they start conference play with Georgia Tech.
I mean, yeah, I think that the ACC is definitely a strange conference this year. Nobody really sticks out to me except for Duke. But I'm going to take Virginia Tech. They were obviously a tournament team last year, had a really good win over a third-ranked Villanova at the time. They obviously retained Kiva Aluma. And I think he's one of the best players in the conference, so to watch him have full reins of that offense is going to be pretty interesting. And yeah, I'm going to have to go with Virginia Tech. They're my team to keep an eye on, and more specifically, Kiva Aluma.
Considering Virginia's early season loss to Navy, when you go down the ACC standings right now, there are only two teams I feel confident about getting a berth into March Madness at all, Duke and Florida State. UNC, I think, will probably get there as well. There's a lot of teams that are just maybes in the ACC, and we'll see how it shakes out once we get to conference play. I'm going to highlight Pitt because they have been just an abomination this season already. They lost the opener by 15 to the Citadel, beat UNC Wilmington by 8, beat Towson by 4, and then got pumped by Vanderbilt on their home court and lost to UMBC.
I mean,
not much more you can say as you go down the Pitt schedule. They just didn't really have any recruiting. The recruiting class was one guy, a three-star, that's not going to cut it.
But, yeah, I think Pitt sucks. Capel's got to go. As a member of UConn Twitter, I do find it kind of funny. There's this one guy that tweets that Capel is a better – like, that tweeted in, like, 2018, like, right when Capel got hired. He was like, well, I think Capel's a better coach than Danny Hurley because he's at a Power 5 program and he has all these resources and he's going to be able to bring in great – recruiting classes all the time. Newsflash, he hasn't. He's had one good player since he became the head coach, that being Justin Champagne. But, I mean, yeah, he's just not good. Big East now, right? We're doing Big East.
Yep,
now.
Big East last. I'm going to go Seton Hall here. I got a chance to watch them early on against Michigan, and their new pieces I really like. They can protect the rim. Bryce
Obiagu. You're thinking of Obiagu. Yeah. Excellent rim defender.
Yeah, and they've got a really nice team. I mean, Kadari Richmond is – there's new pieces that need to learn to play together, but I really like that this – I really like this Seton Hall team. Like I said, they haven't played together. They're ranked 210th in time played together in the country, so obviously this team – doesn't have the most experience, a lot of transfer pieces. But I think that they've got a pretty good squad. Took a tough loss to Ohio State on a neutral court, but they're going to take a couple wins. And then they've got one more tough non-conference game. They'll play Texas. I think it'll be really interesting to see how they battle in that one at home. It's a tough Texas team, but I think Seton Hall, you need to start looking out for them to be in the top of the Big East.
Mine's St. John's, Seton Hall's biggest rival. I think that Julian Champagne is incredible. He's just like his brother. Can score it at will. They obviously have Posh Alexander, who won Big East defensive co-defensive player of the year last year as a freshman, which is unheard of. So, I mean, they've got what they need to do. Mike Anderson is prepared to bring this St. John's Red Storm team back to the tournament for the first time in God knows how long, 8 years at this point, maybe. I think that St. John's is primed to make the tournament. They had a really good game at Assembly Hall against Indiana, and I think they should have won that game. And I think that St. John's is going to make a run at the Big East title this year.
I had two teams in mind. I thought one of you would say both, either one of them, but nobody did, so I'll give them both. First is DePaul. They've really only played Rutgers so far. They are 6-0. Tony Stubblefield has his team playing hard, and Jalen Terry, the transfer who came with Stubblefield from Oregon, is now eligible, so they're getting better and right on time because they got to play Loyola Chicago, Louisville, and Northwestern before their non-conference slate wraps up, and then Shaka Smart and Marquette have rolled through difficult non-conference slate. They outleg Illinois 67-66. They beat Ole Miss and then West Virginia, three very good wins. They took their first loss of the season against St. Bonaventure, but they have had a really good start. And they'll have a rematch from their victory last year against Wisconsin, a game against Kansas State, and then a big one with UCLA. They have a chance at a tournament bid in Shaka Smart's first year here.
Yep, agreed. Okay, mid-major, doesn't matter what conference, shoot from any mid-major. I'll go first. I'll go with the Drake Bulldogs. Made the tournament last year. Lose Joseph Yusefu, and I think a lot of people didn't know really how Drake would bounce back. They're 3-3 right now, but their record's not indicative of how they've played. Those three losses, two of them come by a combined 7 points. They're playing hard. Alabama, they lost to by 9, and Roman Penn's back. So I think that Drake, we talked about Loyola Chicago, but don't sleep on Drake to be back at the spot that they were a year ago. I think they've got another good team. And they stayed together. They've got their top 35 in experience and top 35 in minutes played together. So I think they've got another good team, and in a Missouri Valley that I think that's really just them and Loyola Chicago. I think that they have a good shot of going toe to toe with Loyola Chicago.
And my mid-major, if you consider it a mid-major, I'd have to go with St. Bonnie's. Mark Schmidt, more with less. I wouldn't say he has less this year, though. He has two players in my top 50. Kyle Lofton, who's proving to be one of the premier point guards in all of college basketball, in their MTE, averaged 17 points a game, and I want to say it was 7 assists a game as well. They also have Osun Osunyi, who's just a threat inside. I think that they're going to give UConn an excellent game. The head coach at my high school used to coach for University of Hartford, and he had to make a scout against them. He said that it was the most complicated thing he's ever seen, their offense and the way that they run their team. And I think that's going to carry them a long way in the A-10. I think they'll win that conference. And I think that they're going to beat UConn when they play in the Never Forget Classic at the Prudential Center later this month.
Yeah, they just lost to Northern Iowa to fall to 6-1. They
serious?
Got a chance to roll into that game against UConn with a 9-1 record. They are squarely in the top 25. And I'm going to say, along with Gonzaga, St. Bonaventure has graduated to not really a mid-major, which means I'm going to say that the best mid-major in the country is Colorado State. 7-0 are the Rams. They thumped Creighton on the road, and they are just playing really good defense right now. In the Mountain West, they sit atop their conference. They have two interesting games coming up at Mississippi State and at Alabama.
I believe the game against Mississippi State is a rematch of the NIT, right?
No, they did not play Mississippi State yet. Oh, maybe.
In the NIT last year. Because I know both teams were in it.
Maybe. I don't know. But if they can beat either Mississippi State or Alabama and put together a good conference slate in the Mountain West, that could be a pretty high tournament bid for Colorado State.
Mm-hmm. And also, speaking of mid-majors, shout out Rick Pitino for coming back and beating Alabama after Alabama bounced them from the tournament last year. That's pretty awesome. I mean, you just don't see that very often. Shout out Dayton as well. Would we say they're a mid-major?
Yeah, I still think they are.
Yeah, if they did something in the tournament in 2020, had they not canceled it, I don't think they would be. Anyways, they've lost to Austin Peay, UMass Lowell, and who's the other one?
Lipscomb was the other team.
Lipscomb, yeah, thank you. Lipscomb. And then they go out and beat number four Kansas just out of nowhere in Orlando, just completely out of nowhere on an insane buzzer beater. Shout out Anthony Grant. He's been there for a long time, so it's good to see him get revenge of that Maui classic finals game from fall 2019. But do you want to do one great takeaway?
Sure.
All right, I'll go first. Let's have Adam go first because something happened big with his university this weekend.
Are you referring to
basketball related, technically?
Michigan beat Ohio State. Finally. Feels good. I will say that sometimes when Michigan football is performing at a high level, such as they are now, it's sometimes a little bit harder for me to do my full deep dive into college basketball, which right now it's okay splitting eyes because this Michigan basketball team is kind of hard to watch right now. But like I said earlier, I think that Michigan basketball will be back. But my one great takeaway, I guess I'll do an actual college basketball specific one. I'm going to go Ohio State. Chris Holtmann drew up one of the better plays I've seen in college basketball in the past year. The game-winning three-pointer, it's Meechie Johnson. If you even look beyond Meechie's shot, there were a numerous amount of options that play could have gone, and I thought it was just a really well-designed play. It took a loss to Florida, but regardless, I like Ohio State, and I think I just want to give my one great takeaway. Chris Holman's one of the best coaches in the country, and I just got a reminder of that watching him draw up that play to beat Seton Hall at the buzzer.
And my one great takeaway is probably the Big East dominating the Big Ten in the Gavitt games. I want to say the Big East went 6-2, if that's correct. Yeah, so they went 6-2 against the Big Ten. Losses coming at the hands of Michigan State and Indiana. But the Big East is back. I think I can fully say that with utmost confidence. There's 5-6 teams that should be considered to be ranked or ranked, getting vote getters. Obviously, Klein is a hater of the new Big East. I kind of am as well. But the Big East is playing the best basketball it has in a really long time. So it's really awesome to see that.
My one great takeaway is going to be basically a mid-major team that didn't make my mention a few minutes ago, Eastern Washington. They're only 3-3 in the Big Sky, but remember, they lost their coach and their star players, the two twins, this season, and they went out there and beat Washington State a few nights ago. A big win for Eastern Washington, and yeah, I don't even know if I could name their mascot. Is it the Eagles?
I think it's like the Eagle. Yeah,
it is Eastern Washington.
I know that they have. I know that they have red turf on their football field.
Yeah, yeah. True.
But I think that's all from us this week. You guys ain't got anything else to say?
Oh, as always, stay tuned. Sorry for the delay in getting this out to you guys, but hopefully we can get back in a groove now the season's underway.
And make sure to follow our social medias at CBB365Pod, both on Twitter and Instagram. For Adam Hipsky, Jay Klein, I'm Patrick Dallahan. See you guys next week with another wrap-up.